This is Near FM.
Weekday mornings from 11.
This is Northside Today.
Joining me in the studio now, I have Waheed Mahiadeen from the Clondalkin Towers Refugee Centre. Welcome to Near FM, Waheed.
Thank you very much, Mark.
It's nice to have you here with us. What we're going to talk about, Waheed, as I said before we went to that song, was I suppose there's lots of words put on the kind of feelings that are prevalent throughout the world, and we see them especially having grown around Europe in the last few years. People say Islamophobia, people say, you know, anti-immigration, blah, you know, there's lots of terminology. They're not always necessarily the same thing, but there's lots of terminology, and people get kind of lost in the noise. People think they're all the same thing. Islamophobia, we were talking before we came on air, and it's not a term that you like. It's a term that you're not kind of comfortable with. Could you explain that?
Well, I don't find anything particular in the Islamophobia or the anti-immigration, yeah? Particularly in Ireland, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, on 15th of March last year, I arrived in Dublin, and I found the... I found the Irish people very nice, very cooperative. I became member of the Irish Writers' Centre. I completed short documentary making course from FilmBase.
Mm-hmm.
And I am also involved in some theatre projects. Yeah? So I feel that as an immigrant, as a refugee, I find the Irish people very cooperative and... however, sometime we listen and we feel that there is something like the racism or like bullying, yeah. Mm-hmm. But it is very low in number, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this is the thing, and as I say, people get very angry about words. They get very angry about words. People who we know we've an awful refugee crisis across Europe. We all see the pictures every day. There are lots of people who are against the amount of refugees that are coming into Europe. They don't want their nations or Europe on a whole to be taking in any more refugees and all of this. And when you come back at them and they're angry and they're making that case, and people say they're just racist, they get very angry about that. And because people get hung up on the terminology. That's why I started with Islamophobia. Putting terms and everything. It's a very, very complex issue that we're facing. I don't know how, but the way to sort it out, I think, is for people to start understanding each other. And that's something you're trying to promote, isn't it? People understanding each other, communities getting to know each other, as integration. The more integration, the better people get along, the better people will understand each other, and the better it will be ultimately then for the way of life of everyone, and we'll see a more peaceful lifestyle. Is that, that's kind of where you're coming from, isn't it?
Well, Islamophobia, the terrorism, the ISIS, the Daesh, the Taliban, and like that, yeah. Most of the Muslim community, they do not follow them, they do not believe in them, and they disown them. As you know, that there are nearly 1.5 billion Muslims in the world, and a big majority do not follow them, yeah. So, but the problem is that all over the world, the big number of the attacks, like terrorism or like that, yeah, they have been conducted by the Muslims, yeah. This is the fact.
Yes.
This is the open fact, yeah. So as a Muslim, I am very open to that we will have to accept the challenge. We will have to prove that we are the peaceful nation. We belong to the peaceful religion. But appearance versus reality. This is the new reality, yeah. If if we say only by words that we are Muslim and we are peaceful, we belong to peaceful religion, and openly, if the terrorist attacks are being conducted by the Muslims, then what is this? So this is the phenomenon. This is the problem within the Muslim community. This is the problem within Islam. Yeah. So I like to explain it a bit more. Yeah. Islamophobic people are the people who are being called the racist or like that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that we should also look. We should also listen to them. We should look to their perspective. If the people are looking everywhere that the Daesh and the ISIS and the Taliban and the terrorists, if they are beheading people, if they are killing the innocent children, women, and elderly people, if there is no welfare opportunities, if there is no life there, then how can we expect that the other nations, like the European nation, the Canadian, American, are like that, yeah, the Australian, New Zealanders, yeah, how they will believe that we, the Muslims, are the peaceful nation? So we will have to listen them, and the best thing is that the integration, the meetings, the seminars, the media coverage, and all of these things. Yeah,
I'd like to. And what you said is very, very interesting. All of what you said is very interesting, and if I could just turn one little bit of it on its head, and. You know, the Muslim community, as you say, integration and getting the word out to people that, you know, these are extremists, they're terrorists, they're extremists, they're not representative of Islam or the whatever, but they're flying the flag of Islam, for want of better words. Is there anything? And I'm not saying it's easy. It's obviously very difficult within the community of Islam that you can do to get the message to the terrorists, to the extremists, that we don't want you. I know that's a difficult question to answer because you can't just walk up to them and say stop doing that. We don't like it. But one of the criticisms that's often thrown, as I said, at the Muslim community is that they don't do enough to stop the terrorism. Now, we don't know what you can do to stop it, but how does that sit with the Muslim community and followers of Islam?
Well, I had a lot of seminars and lectures, but I cannot understand the word extremism till now. There is nothing like this. Every religion, every community, everyone is extremist at its own perspective. If I belong to a particular religion, if someone other belong to his particular religion, so everybody is extremist to some extent, yeah. But the key word is the terrorism. I think today if we differentiate the two keywords, extremism is just nothing. It's just a useless term. The actual term is terrorism. From where the terrorism is coming? The terrorism is coming from ignorance. And from where the ignorance is coming? Ignorance is coming from corruption. And from where the corruption is coming? Corruption is coming from leadership. And from where the leadership is coming? Leadership is coming from... It's absurd.
So you're making...
from people. For example, in my own country, I belong to Pakistan, basically. In my country, We had a lot of potential. People are extremely good here. Yeah? People are wonderful here. Yeah? We have potential. We have resources, everything. But we do not have one thing, the honest and professional leadership.
Well, to be fair, that's probably, you could probably make that accusation about maybe most of the leaders around the world. But, and it's great that you've made that connection, because it draws a picture. You know, the social climate, social deprivation and things like that are what make people angry. They're what make people want to rise up. They're what make people want to lash out. And again, as you say, that goes all the way up the line to the politicians, to the leaders, to the rulers, and the rules they make and how they implement them. And it's probably all rooted in power mongering and corruption and greed and all of that. But you can't stop that. Again, you can't walk up to the president's door and go, sorry, would you be a nicer president, please? Because he's just going to go, no, or he's going to whatever, you know? So again, it's the might of the people. And it's what's difficult. And what I'm trying to say is what's difficult for Muslims at the minute is that they're getting it from everywhere. They're living in countries that are war zones and everything else. And then, like, it's natural for anyone wanting to flee a war zone. No one wants to live in a war zone. We see images of Syria now, and we see how devastated it is. Nobody wants to live in conditions like that. I certainly don't. I know if I was living in conditions like that, I'd probably be running away too. So, but then when you go to try and find a better life somewhere else, you're getting it then as well. We don't. So it's very, very difficult kind of centre of things where the Muslim community finds itself now. And it's how you break out of that, how you get your word across, how you get people to understand. And as you say, integration is probably one of the best ways to go. What form does that integration take, other than, you know, seminars? Is it about getting out into communities, going to meet people, integrating schools, integrating clubs, integrating sports teams? Is that happening? Do you see that happening? I know, no. I said I gave you a lot of information there.
Yeah. I'd like to divide your question into two parts.
Yeah.
First of all, the beginning, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Actually, the problem lies within the Muslim community. As a Muslim, it is not easy for me to say this, yeah? But we have to be honest, yeah? The Muslim community, they are not following the particular things that are really needed for the human development.
Yeah.
Human development is the point which have been ignored from the ages throughout the history. Four or 500 years history, we can see that for example, more than 50 countries belong to Islam today. How many are the welfare states? We can count on fingers if we found any. And we see that that there are so many Muslim countries who are very rich. They are rich with oil, mineral, gold, and coal, and everything, yeah? If they do have that much wealth still, why they are not welfare? Why only the Muslim? I mean, most of the refugees all over the world, why they are Muslim? These are the questions. These are the very bold questions which a Muslim want to ask from the Muslim community. That if we have wealth, if we have everything, then why we have to seek refuge? The reason is human development. Because ultimately our leaders, they are building roads, infrastructures, all like that, but they are not building proper human resources. They are not making proper human. And this is the reason that today we can see that the refuge, that the refugees coming from the Muslim countries, they are somewhere, not everywhere, but somehow we can, we see some news like the, like a refugee, he tried to steal the mobile phone of somebody, or, I don't know how to say this, yeah, but, in some countries of European Union, yeah, there are some organizations who are giving the Muslim community training how to deal with the women, how to deal with the people. Yeah, so if these people have staying in their country for last many years, where was this training? So ultimately, we'll have to talk about the corruption and all of these things.
Yeah, so what I'm getting from, and I want to understand this correctly, and I hope I'm understanding it correctly, is that what you're saying is in lots of predominantly Muslim countries, lots and lots of people are poor. They struggle to get by, and that way then they become desperate. And they're open then to the manipulation of the leaders, and you know, desperate people do desperate things. Is that in a nutshell what I'm saying? I don't know whether I've got that right or not. If I haven't, correct me, but is that what you're saying?
No, it's not that what I'm
saying. Okay, I apologize.
I'm saying that the Muslim countries are not poor.
I apologize.
Yes. You are absolutely right. If we see the media reports, if we see the research reports, that the general public is poor. But if the general public is poor, how it can be possible that the leader is a filthy rich person?
There is a big question mark. This is what we wear on the right tracks, just coming out from different angles. I think this is what I'm saying to you, is that we've got wealthy, loads of riches, oil rich countries, leaders who are hugely rich and live in lavish lifestyles and everything else, but the vast majority of the population, that wealth doesn't trickle down to them. And they become desperate, they become, how would you say, angry with the leaders. They're living in awful conditions. They can't feed their children, they can't get work, they can't get education. So they get angry and then they rise up, and then they're open then to extreme ideologies. Just to go back to that word, extremists, extreme ideologies like the Taliban, like Daesh, who are using extreme ideologies to radicalise people, desperate people who are, and they're saying, you know, look at these guys. These guys have all our money. These guys have, we need to take our money back. And that's then how you're creating, you're radicalising people. You're getting them to follow a terrorist path or the ugly path we're seeing we see some Muslims following.
Sorry, once again, I don't agree with you.
I speak too fast, do I? Sorry, I beg your pardon.
I don't agree with you, because the Daesh, the Taliban, and ISIS, and all of these things, these are not politically motivated people. These are the religiously motivated people. They base on religion. They base on their extreme type of religious
ideologies.
Thoughts, yeah? So these are not based on the political revolution or like that, yeah?
Okay, so we're getting there. We're breaking it down and it's good. I'm liking it. What then is it that's... is it just they're taking the Quran and certain sections of the Quran to mean a certain thing and they're acting it out that way? Is that what they're doing?
Would you please make your question clear?
The terrorists, Daesh or Taliban or everything else. Is this what they do then? Is, as you say, they're motivated by religion. So are they then taking the word of the Quran or whatever and taking it to mean they're manipulating the words to create an ideology that they believe in, that then they believe wholeheartedly that what they're doing is God's work?
Oh, well. I explained this, all of these things in my book, The Chains. Not that these people, I'm not a religious scholar, okay, so I will be very careful to speak on this topic, yeah. You know, that somehow they, these people, they misinterpret the things, yeah. They misinterpret. For example, when they say kill Jews and Christians, there's a big question mark. When they say that the, at one point I, but at so many point, not a particular one point, I don't agree with this type of ideology. For example, the within Islam, we see that the child marriages. I have so many Christian friends, Jews friends, and other community friends. Yeah, but what is the point that in the 21st century, is there? It is just prehistoric thing. Yeah, to have the child marriages. Yeah, and we can see there's so many child marriages happening all around the world, especially in the Muslim community. Yeah. In the Muslim world, not, I like to make it clear that the big majority of the modern Muslims who are living in America, living in Europe, living even in their own countries, yeah, they do not believe it. But still, we can see that so many child marriages are happening in Yemen, in Pakistan, in Afghanistan, yeah. So still, there is a big issue. So when the modern community, when the modern people see this live picture of child marriages, beheading people, so they turn against Islam. And psychologically, they are not wrong. As a media, on the media, we can... we see some people to say that Islam is a peaceful religion. Yeah, yes, of course, Islam is a peaceful religion. But the question is that, is the Muslim all over the world are proving it by their action, or they are just using the word of mouth?
This is exactly. I agree. I'm getting with you now, and is that we know that the terrorists and all of these and the people who believe in the child marriages and everything else are a small majority of the millions of Muslims that are, and again, it's not a question, it's easy to answer. How is the small minority getting away with what they're doing? Why is the majority not doing more to stop them and make them see that this isn't the right way?
Again, I will say that the global leaders should invest on human development. You know that the change will not occur in one day. There is a long way to go. This is just a beginning. This is the beginning on the negative side, and we'll have to take the beginning from the positive side. We should develop, we should invest. I mean, as a resident of the whole world, I'm saying that we should invest on the human development rather than the construction of roads and bridges. Yeah, this will be the most important point. If we invest today on human development without corruption, then after 10 years, after 15 years, we can see that there will be a dramatic decrease in the terrorist activities. Yeah.
Okay. We've covered a lot of the political stuff, and you know, people have a million opinions on it. It's a hugely diverse issue, and as you say, it's not going to go away overnight. It's going to take an awful lot of work from an awful lot of people. So we'll kind of park that. I think we've gone over as much ground on that as we can for now. I mean, we could spend hours talking about it, obviously, but we'll move on to different things. As you said yourself, you're from Pakistan and you arrived here in Ireland about a year ago. You were a university lecturer in Pakistan, is that correct?
Yeah.
Maybe, can you tell us about your story, how you ended up in Ireland? So as people understand the real life stories of how refugees end up in different countries and what it is that makes them make that move.
Well, I like to start my story with a sentence that before 15th March 2015, I believe that Pakistan is my mother, and of course that is my motherland, and I love that. And when I arrive in Dublin, I change my statement, and I believe that today I have two mothers. One is Pakistan and one is Ireland. Pakistan is the land who gave me birth, who gave me life, and Ireland is the land who saved my life. So I love both of them with equal, you may say that the passion of love, yeah? I was a university lecturer there. I had I had to go to different colleges, to different universities for the lectures. Yeah, the story begins when I was 10 years old, or even lesser. I could not speak properly. I had a severe stammering, and one time my family members, they decided to drop me out from the school, yeah, because I could not speak properly. So what is the point to go to school and learn nothing? Yeah, I could not participate in the activities. Yeah, then I wrote on the piece of paper that I want to become a teacher, and I will be. And then my elder sister, Mahmuda, she hugged me and she said that yes, you will be. And after nearly 15 years, I completed my master's in English literature, my post-graduation in social policy and development, my post-graduation in women's studies, and I became the university lecturer in Pakistan. Yeah, I completed my high studies from England. When I joined the university, I often talk about the secret societies, about the New World Order, about the some tricky things, yeah, the international relations. Yeah, one day I say some good words about Israel, about Jews, yeah. And you know that in Pakistan, yeah, overall people are very good, yeah, but they have not been properly informed, yeah. And I just raise a simple question to my students, yeah, that why Pakistan is not recognizing Israel. It was just a simple question. I was not saying that Pakistan should recognize. Yeah, I just raise a question, and I have to face a lot of criticism. Yeah, I smelled on that day, I smelled that where we are going, where this nation is going, even if they do not want to listen. Then, ultimately, by the passage of time, yeah, I wrote my books in 2014, The Chains. I wrote the book with the inspiration, with the talk of my brother-in-law, my friend Asad Mahmood. And then I wrote The Revenge. That is, Revenge is basically the story of a madrasa student who have been sexually abused in his madrasa. Not every madrasa is like this, but somehow we can find some madrasas where the teachers are are doing the sexual harassment and the abuse with their students. Yeah, and then when the student grow up, he take his revenge back. And my friend Asad, yeah, he wrote the preface of the book, yeah. So ultimately, we both have to pay the price for that, yeah. Asad is in Cork, I am in Dublin. We both, and by the way, Asad was advocate in Pakistan, yeah. He was a human rights activist, yeah. He was very much famous in writing columns for the human rights, yeah, and all of these things, yeah. So we have to pay the price, yeah. We our words made us refugees, yeah. So
it's really interesting. So you wrote your books, and as you say, you asked a simple question to your students one day. Did you come under threat because of that, or was it just the feeling you were getting that it was becoming uncomfortable? Was there a specific threat made to you?
It was not just smell.
Yeah.
It was particularly threat, yeah. People attacked on my house. Okay. On 2nd of Ramadan, yeah. The previous Ramadan, yeah. A bunch of people, yeah. They attacked on my house. They asked some strange questions. And Asad, yeah, in the first week of February, he had been fired, but luckily he survived, yeah. So our life, Asad was a professional, I was a professional, we had a good life there. I had a wife, children, what a life there was. But and by the way, this is not first time I came to Europe. Before that, so many times I came to Europe to attend the conferences, to deliver lectures, to complete my studies from England. In 2011, I was invited to Finland to present my research paper, yeah, and then to Paris, and then to Austria. So, but this time was totally different, yeah.
Yeah, very strange. And
strange.
Have you left? Did you leave your family now behind you, or did your family come to Ireland with you?
Oh, my family, they disowned. They just, I don't know.
Your wife, your children, everybody.
Yeah, they are back in Pakistan. Yeah, and they have disowned me. Yeah.
Mm. Okay. I wanted you to tell that story because it's interesting sometimes for people to understand the circumstances of why refugees come here. Do you still harbour hope of going back? Do you think you'll ever get to go back? Or,
you know, Nelson Mandela, he's one of my ideal. He went back to his country after so many years, yeah. And Pakistan is my motherland. Pakistan is my home country. One day, I am speaking the historic words. One day, Waheed will go back with complete honor and dignity.
Well, we wish you very, 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 very much success with that. Waheed, last thing before I let you go, because it's been fascinating talking to you. Thank you so much for coming in and telling us your story and talking us through some of the issues. You mentioned your books. Are your books available if people want to buy them or get a hold of them?
It's a commercial break.
Okay.
Yes, my books are available on Amazon.com, on eBay, and on Connolly Bookshop, Temple Bar, yeah.
Okay, so if anybody's listening in and they're interested in what it was that led to this turn in your life, they can go and get the books and have a read of them. Listen, Waheed, thanks so much for coming in and talking.
Thank you very much, Mark. It's nice to chat to you.
Really great talking to you. I think the more people talk, the better chance we have of understanding one another. We just need to keep talking. We may have to go through a few years of really ugly stuff, but hopefully sooner or later everyone will sit down and we'll all talk and we'll all just kind of live better lives, more understanding lives, if that can be achieved. But say, listen, thanks so much for coming in to us. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mark. Thank you very much.
This is Near FM.
Weekday mornings from 11.
This is Northside Today.